I wanted to start by asking you how many of you have written down a whole bunch of cool ideas to bring back to your team? How many of you have a stack of things sitting in your inbox for when you get back Monday that your boss is bugging you about? Okay, a lot of you. How many of you have a giant team of people that you can pass all this stuff off to? Nobody, okay. So the last session hopefully will help you guys out with some of that. I think as by way of intro, I am from Duke University, and I have heard sort of through the grapevine that there's a mistaken impression that we have a huge team and a lot of money and we can do whatever we want. And that is not the case. So I want to tell you a little bit about how our team works, and hopefully that can inspire you to be able to do a lot with what resources that you do have when you go back home. So I'll tell you a little bit about our team. We are small but mighty. There is me. I am the Director of Social Media and Content Strategy, so I do a lot of training of my colleagues, and I do sort of the main social media strategy. And then my colleague Lindsay, who is the Senior Social Media Strategist, is my direct report, and she does most of the button pushing. So she does the scheduling of our content, and she posts things on Twitter, and she helps with creating some of that content as well. And then we have our boss, who I report directly to, Laura Bren, and she is the Executive Director of Global Communications. So half of her job is not social media, half of her job is global communications, which is PR and a bunch of other things. So technically we have 2.5 people on staff that do social media for all of the Duke University channels. So I want to show you a few of the Duke University channels that we have. These are just a few of the ones that we have. We have, of course, all of your standard ones. We also have Duke students accounts, which we are in charge of, and those students report to us. So you'll see that Duke students is listed up there with a Snapchat account. We do not have an institutional Snapchat account. That is just a Duke students account, and that's on purpose. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. The Duke students have a few other channels that we don't have, for the main university institutional channels. And we also have some channels for our Chinese audience. That's what those two at the bottom are. Those are Weibo and WeChat. So we run those as well. And that, well, we actually get some help from our Chinese students to run those because I can't read Chinese. So as you can see, we have a small team and a lot of channels to manage and a lot of content to produce. So how do we do it? Well, first of all, we depend greatly on all of our colleagues, and we work to inspire them to be creative and innovative with us. So I want to talk first about inspiring creativity and innovation in your team so that they can be your best helpers and advocates for whatever that you're doing. And the first thing I think that's really important is to encourage play. And that starts for me with our students. We have a big student team. I have 7 student editors for all of the different Duke students channels, and those editors are paid, not very much, but a little bit, and those student editors are in charge. They have complete control over the Duke students channels. Now, of course, I have access to them as well and can pull down things if necessary, but it very, very rarely happens. So our students help us to be much more creative than we could be on our own. Our students are the ones who know things before we know them. Our students are the ones who are not afraid to take risks on social media. And the student platforms give us a way that we can take risks without using our institutional platforms to do that necessarily. So here's how we're set up. We have a team of students, one student editor for each of the Duke students channels. So we have, right now we have Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Tumblr. I'm missing one. We also have a Spotify and a few other things that the students sort of take turns running, and a YouTube as well. So each one of those students is in charge of a channel. They also have a team of content contributors. Those are mostly underclassmen. They are unpaid. And what they do is they send in content for our student editors, and our student editors can pick from that content to post it on their various channels. So if it's good for Instagram, they can post it on Instagram. Or if it works really well for Snapchat, they'll post it on Snapchat. And I'll talk a little bit more about Snapchat later, because I know that's kind of the outlier on collecting content, and we have a solution for it. We have minimal in-person meetings with those students. So with the huge team of students, including the underclassmen, which there are about 26 underclassmen that are reporting to the Duke students editors, we have a meeting once a month. And that's a workshop meeting. And so that at that meeting, we give them some tips on what they can do to make better social media content. So our last meeting was about visuals. So we had a photographer from our campus come in and give them a lot of really neat tips on how to take great photos just with your mobile phone. And we also use that as an opportunity to get them to get to know each other and to get to know their student mentors, who are the editors on the social media team. For our editors, we have a meeting every 2 weeks, and it's only for an hour. And we just go over sort of the projects that we're working on. We check in with them. We make sure that we have event coverage. And everything else is done remotely. So we don't use email, because the students do not like email. We use a GroupMe chat. And that's a great way that we found that we can keep in touch with our students when they're remote. And it's a way that we can keep those in-person meetings to a minimum, because we don't have time, they don't have time. We actually have to pay them for fewer hours if we're not asking them to come in for meetings all the time. So the GroupMe is actually a really good way for us to sort of keep in touch with them and to let them know what we need in between meetings. And the students' accounts are actually owned by the students. The students' editors for each account have complete control to post whatever it is they want. We give them a set of guidelines at the beginning of the year, and basically that guideline is, if your grandmother would be offended, please don't post it. We have a few specific rules, no red solo cups. We don't promote any of the fraternity or sorority stuff on those channels. But mostly, they can do what they want. So that allows them to be a lot less formal than our institutional channels. It allows them to use their own voices. It allows them to choose content that they know is going to be interesting to their peers. So we give them lots and lots of control on that, and that helps us with fueling creative ideas. And a lot of times, our institutional accounts will steal ideas from the Duke students' accounts, because they can do it faster and with less resistance than we can do it on our institutional accounts. So we steal their ideas all the time. So the next thing to foster creativity and innovation and encourage play is to teach your coworkers how they can play and how they can help you. So we do office lunch and learns, and my favorite lunch and learn that we've ever done in the office, I work in the central office of news and communications for the university, so it's a lot of recovering journalists, we'll say. And so my favorite lunch and learn that we ever did was teaching everybody in the office how to use Snapchat. So we actually just plugged a phone into the screen and walked everybody through creating a Snapchat account, how to snap to your friends, how to post to your story, how to use emojis, how to use Bitmojis, and it was very, very 101, Snapchat 101. But we had a lot of folks in the office who weren't doing Snapchat. It was just the social media team. So now what we've created is a whole office of people who are empowered to use Snapchat, so they know how Snapchat works, and they know how that channel works for if they need to create content for that channel. So we do that with other channels than just Snapchat, because we want people in our office to know what we're doing and how they can help us do our jobs. So they're creating a lot of the content, and we need them to be thinking about how we can share their content on these channels. And they can't do it if they don't understand the channels. We also do a lot of campus education and networking. And by networking, I mean we drink a lot of beers. We do a monthly meeting where we do a workshop for all of the campus communicators, and there are about 300 at Duke. Duke is not a huge university, but there are a lot of departments and a lot of units, and each one has their own communicator. So we try to get everybody together at least once a month and do some networking and education, and just keep everybody in touch, and that way we can all work together. Another thing that we do is we make sure we share our findings. We collect our data, and we're very, very transparent with the rest of our colleagues at Duke about what we've done, what's worked, and what has not worked. And we make sure that we share that regularly. And we get a lot of really good collaboration from our colleagues across campus who are also then willing to share their data. And it helps us all to not have to each one of us learn the hard lessons along the way. So one of us can learn it and warn everybody else. My other trick for encouraging play is, if you want to be good at social media, it's best to be on social media yourself. You'll see, if you stalk me on social media at all, I'm everywhere, because I think it's fun. And I tell people that I have the most fun job, because I get to play around on the internet all day, and I would do it anyway, even if they didn't pay me to do it. So if you're not having fun with social media, find some piece of social media that you can have fun with, sort of on your personal accounts. So go stalk me later, it's fun. The other thing that you want to do to foster creativity and innovation is to try new things. And I'm lucky to work at a university where we get sort of a lot of leeway to just throw things out there and see if they work. The student channels help with that, but we actually also have quite a bit of leeway with our institutional channels. That comes from the top down. So the way you can try new things is, one, listening to your students. If you have students who are working for you, or if you have students on your campus, which you all do because you all work at higher ed institutions, use those students to tell you what's going on. We use our students all the time to tell us about new platforms, things that we don't necessarily know about. This, for example, is their Tumblr, and they know exactly how to use Tumblr to reach their peers. If I sat down and tried to do Tumblr, I would probably post like GIFs of Sherlock Holmes or something, and that's as far as I would get. But the students know how to create content that's going to reach their peers and do a really nice job. We also ask them if we're using the platforms that we have in the right ways. So this is it's really small, but you can sort of see it's a screen capture of their Snapchat, and that's the sort of unofficial campus dog mascot. His name is Nugget, and the students love him. So we keep in touch with them on what they want to see and what's interesting to them. So the other thing we do is we test a lot of stuff out. So I'm sorry for this screenshot. I know it's a weird screenshot of her face, but so we test stuff out. So we saw another university doing science shows on their science sort of previews on their Instagram stories, and we had some content. So this took maybe like an hour to put together, and we just decided to run with it and see how it went. So I'll show you the video. It's short. Okay, so really simple. This content already existed. One of my colleagues had made the video. Another one of my colleagues had written the story. It already existed. So all I did was cut up the video and right-size it for Instagram stories. So we have a lot of freedom to test stuff like this, and we have the skills on our team to kind of cut things up and make things fit where they need to fit. And actually, the results of this were really great, and we would have never known that if we hadn't just sort of taken a chance and tried it out. So the other thing that I will tell you is a good hint is if you want to try stuff out, you need to make sure that you're reporting to your bosses on what works and what doesn't. And that means that you need to be collecting the data on the front end. So in the spirit of honesty, I will also share with you something that didn't work. So you should have the freedom to fail sometimes. Here's a video that we did for the 4th of July. That's it. So we posted that on Facebook and Instagram, but my favorite comments came from Facebook, and I will share a few of those with you now. The first one says, "What is this nonsense?" The next one says, "What even?" Which is like my favorite reaction ever. I say "what even" a lot. And the last one is my personal favorite. "Who taught Duke University how to shitpost?" And that one was the very top comment on the post. It's still there right underneath the post. If you scroll back to July 4th, it's still there. We didn't hide it. So sometimes we fail. And we reported on the failure to our higher-ups. We all did an analysis of why it didn't work. And then we're just not going to do that again. So sometimes you fail. It's going to happen. And you know what? The world didn't end. Somebody put shitpost on our page. Whatever. It's fine. It's fine. So sometimes you have to fail. So the other point that I've sort of already made is that you need to measure and report in order to get sort of the freedom to be creative. This is one of our reports on an Instagram stories and other social media linkbacks that we did for a story on Duke Today, which is our main editorial website where we put all of our news articles. So in this particular case, we were tracking numbers that came in for a story that we do weekly that's a preview of all of the calendar events that are really interesting that are happening at Duke that week. So in this case, we tracked that big chunk right there is from Instagram stories. And Instagram stories are a relatively new thing that we're doing with the swipe up links. So we were able to prove that our work with the Instagram stories has really made a big difference because half of the traffic to that particular page on Duke Today came from Instagram stories. So make sure that you're tracking your data. This one was super easy to track because it's all in Google Analytics. Like, it's one chart that you have to pull. Super easy. So that's a good one to sort of give you an idea that you have the data. So just make sure that you're thinking about it and make sure that you're reporting that data to the people who need to see it. The other thing we do a lot is we run tests. So I'll show you just a little bit of a test that we ran. And this is not a scientific test. There's no statistical significance. Like, if you took this to an A/B testing ad agency, they would laugh you off the street. Like, it's not significant at all. But for our purposes, it works. So we did one promotion that we created from scratch, and then we did a boosted post. And we looked at what our budget was for each of those and what our reach was. And if we'd stopped there, just at the budget and the reach, we would have definitely decided that creating a promotion is way, way better because it's cheaper and it gets way more reach. But then we looked at the clicks. And in that case, the boosted post did way, way, way better. So we're still running experiments in the office to see what's happening between our creative promotions and our boosted posts on Facebook. But if we hadn't run this data, we wouldn't even know to check because our standard sort of operating procedure was to only do creative promotions. So make sure that you're testing your things as you're going forward. Make sure that you do some experiments because things change all the time, especially on Facebook, you all know. So make sure that you're running tests to figure out what's working and what's not. Okay, so now you have all these big ideas. You gotta go back and it's just you or your really small team that have to work on this for you. So how can you do it? Well, I think at every university, everybody wears a lot of hats. So I told you sort of our job titles, but we also have a lot of skills that aren't in our job titles. So for example, I have a marketing background in B2B and B2C companies. I am Google Analytics certified. I can do some video editing and copy editing. My colleague Lindsay is working on her Google Analytics certification, which I recommend you all do because it's free. It's free to take the classes. It's not free to get the actual certification, but the classes are free. She is a great writer, and she is learning motion graphics and video editing, which will be super, super useful. And my boss, Laura, has a background in marketing, news, media, and public relations, which is super, super helpful for us, especially working in a news office. And she's really great at writing and copywriting and project management and production. So she helps us out a lot with like our big video production products and projects and things like that. We are also all really good at Google, so there's a lot of times that we don't understand what we need to do or we don't know where we need to start, but we are willing to learn. So I think that's probably the best selling point of our team, is that when we don't know, we go find out. So the other cool thing that we get to take advantage of since we work in higher ed is that there are education opportunities all around us. You guys work at a learning institution, so use those resources that you have. A lot of universities will allow you to audit classes, so there may be classes in your area where you can learn something from somebody who gets paid to teach that, so take advantage of that. You may also have subscriptions. Check through your library. In this case, at Duke University, our Office of Information Technology has a subscription to Lynda, so everything that's on lynda.com we get for free. So if I need to go learn how to use Final Cut, I just take the Lynda courses, and it's all in there, and it's a great, great resource. And then you've got your peers. So you've got your peers not only at your institution, but at other institutions, and you've probably made some really great connections already in the last 2 days. So use your peers. Call up your peers and ask them, have you done this? What did you do? What did you learn? And I have never gotten a call like that I wasn't super happy about and super happy to help. The other thing that we do in our office to make sure that everything is really efficient is we streamline everything. I am all about efficiency, and anytime we can do something that makes our workflow faster and easier, we do it. So here are some of the tools we use. Some of them are free, some of them are not. I want to point out specifically Canva, because I haven't heard too much about Canva in the last couple of days, but we use Canva really heavily. It's a graphics tool that makes it really easy for non-graphic designers to make graphics. So I would totally recommend that, especially if you're a little strapped in the graphics department. We even have some graphics designers, and we use it really heavily just because we use a lot of graphics, and our graphic designers are not always available. So with Canva, they can make us a template, and we can just drop in our varied assets in it, and it helps us out. The other one that we use that I think not everybody does is MishGuru, and that helps us with Snapchat. And what that does is it allows any snaps to our Duke students' accounts. It captures those and it lets us repost them. So when we're posting to Snapchat, it's not just the content that we're collecting from our student editors, it's the content that we're collecting from the entire student body. So that really helps us out with content collection. And that's a paid service, but we really find it worth it. And the other thing that I really love from this year is LastPass. And that helps us to manage all of our passwords for big groups of people. So we have all of our students with access to accounts and a few people in our office with access to all of our social media accounts, and LastPass makes it really a lot easier to keep track of all that. So use the tools that you have. Some of these are free, like I said, and some of them have a couple of different options, and they're all out there. And the other way you can be really efficient is to put your students to work. So students are, my boss made me change it, but I had cheap labor on here. They're affordable labor. We don't pay the students very much, but we get a lot of return out of what we get from them. So it's me and the grown-ups in the office. And then we have this entire team of Duke Students Editors. I also have a couple of interns that help me out with the Duke institutional accounts, with graphics specifically, and with event coverage. And then we have our underclassmen contributors, like I mentioned, and the entire Duke student body is all contributing content to us because they can send those into Snapchat specifically. So it's not really just the 2.5 of us in the office. It's like kind of the entire student body that we can tap into. So it makes things a lot more efficient. And one tip I will share with you for hiring is when you're hiring, don't necessarily hire for social media skill. You should hire for enthusiasm and for a willingness to be an advocate for your university. You can teach social media. It's not that hard. I mean, sorry, guys. I feel like that's a little insulting to say to a room full of social media experts, but it's not that hard. Like, you can teach somebody how to do social media, but you can't teach them how to be an enthusiastic advocate for your institution. So that's my tip on hiring. And my last tip on being a superstar and doing everything you can do with a really small team and being creative and innovative is to share resources. So you all have colleagues that you work with and colleagues that you've met here. Make sure that you're talking to each other. Somebody somewhere has done the thing that you want to do, and they are going to be willing to help you out. And in that spirit, I'm going to give you my contact information. If you ever need anything, if you ever want to bounce an idea off anybody, if you just have an off-the-wall question that you want to ask, please feel free to get in touch with me. And that's all I got.
Does anybody have any questions? All right, let me bring the mic to you.
Hi, that was awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
My question is regarding your student-generated content and the student accounts. Mm-hmm. You might have answered this. I'm sorry if you did. Who's monitoring it regularly, and how is your social media monitoring in general, aside from the students, structured, I guess, with such a small team?
Mm-hmm. So my colleague Lindsay and I monitor everything that the students post. Like, basically, we're on it all day long, looking at what they post. So it does take some work to monitor that, but monitoring is a lot easier than coming up with content. So we do a lot of monitoring of that. As far as monitoring for interactions and crisis communications and things like that, we use Hootsuite for that. And we're starting to use Cision a little bit as well, which is a tool that we use for media lists mostly, but they've started to integrate some social media listening, so we use that a little bit as well. But most of what we do, especially for the student channels, is we just have the tabs open and are just looking at it all day. So I get paid to do that. It's so fun.
I had a quick question regarding tone and voice, since all the students are posting their own, version. Mm-hmm. And for every post, do you guys ever have some kind of workshop or, I don't know, how to keep it in the brand and in the voice, I suppose?
Yeah, so we worry about brand a little bit less with the student accounts. Brand is super important for the institutional accounts, and we know what brand messaging we want to hit with the institutional accounts, and we're very careful about that. But with the student accounts, it's really a lot more sort of person to person, and it's a lot more informal. So we think of the student voice as really young and really hip, and kind of they are just allowed to do what they want as far as voice. The students have actually asked for training on voice, and so I think our next big workshop where we have all of the students together is going to be something about writing and captioning and, sort of finding your voice. But they, inherently just kind of do a really good job at it. I learn all my new slang from them. do you guys know We Gucci? I just learned that one. If you're good, you say We Gucci. So they teach me all that stuff, and I just I trust them, and they're allowed to be a lot more informal, I think, and a lot less on brand than we are as an institution.
It's okay. We can take questions. Don't worry.
how do you handle institution-specific questions that may come into the student accounts, mm-hmm. And they may not know the answers to those?
So they have like basically 24-hour access to me and my colleague Lindsay, because they're on the GroupMe all the time with us. So if a question comes in that they don't know, we can direct them where to send the student. But a lot of times they know, and a lot of times what the students are wanting when they get in touch with the student channels is an actual student opinion and a voice of an authentic student. So they'll ask, how do you like your dorm? Or what's the raddest place to get pizza on campus? Or, you know, whatever it happens to be. So they really want a student to answer that, and we don't jump in a lot. So if there's something that they don't know, we for sure help them. But a lot of times we'll see them talking back and forth on the GroupMe to each other, and they'll say, okay, who do you know that I can ask about this question because this other kid asked on our Snapchat account or whatever it is. So a lot of it is like kind of self-administered.
Have you seen the student accounts lead to a decrease in following over the years on your main accounts? Is that like a tough sell you had to make at all when you proposed student accounts?
So the student accounts, to be honest, predated me. My predecessor, Kara Russo, set those up. And when she set them up, they were sort of halfway in the admissions department, which the way Duke University is set up, the admissions department is separate from the central comms department. So she had to sort of bridge that gap. And they were originally meant to be a tool mostly for prospective students. And they still are that. And we still partner with admissions, but my position now is fully in the Office of News and Communications. So I think the important thing to keep in mind there is that it's a really good tool for prospective students and for current students. And so you'll need to find the partners on your campus that are in charge of those sort of constituent groups. As far as if we have seen, I think you asked if we have seen the follower numbers go down for our institutional accounts because of the student accounts. We've actually seen the opposite. It seems that the students who are inclined to follow the Duke students' accounts oftentimes will also follow the institutional accounts and appreciate sort of the two different voices. And in some ways, it's allowed us to be a little bit freer with what we do and don't do on our institutional accounts. For example, we don't have an institutional Snapchat. We just have a Duke students' Snapchat. And that's totally on purpose because we didn't think they would care if the institution was snapping at them. So it allows us to have a little bit more flexibility on what we do and what we don't do.
When do you decide to put money behind a post and why?
We don't put a lot of money behind a lot of posts. Usually how we decide to put money behind a post is if that content is in some way politically important to the university. So then we'll put a little bit of money behind it to boost the number of eyeballs that it gets on our website. But we're not, we're sort of in the enviable position of not having to do a lot of heavy recruiting because we get a good number of applications. So we're not putting money behind that sort of thing. So really it depends more on the content we're producing and which pieces of the content we really want to get in front of people.
Hey. I have a question about your Chinese platform. Mm-hmm. So when the students are helping you, are they kind of creating their own content, or are they translating English content into Mandarin that's appearing on your institutional accounts?
It's a combination of both. So the captions are always in Mandarin, which I can't do, so I depend completely on them. They do sometimes translate things. It takes them a long time, and so if it's a really timely piece of information, they'll often post just the English piece of content with the Mandarin caption. And the students who are coming to Duke University can speak English, so it usually works out okay. It's a combination of both, but we just don't have the capacity to translate everything that we post.
Hi, wonderful session.
Thank you.
How do you separate yourself from work? Or what are your tips on like composing yourself?
So an important thing for me actually is having my own social media. and I think that it helps me to be able to be a little bit more playful and a little bit less institutional than I have to be at work. I kind of have a disclaimer like on my Twitter account, I work for Duke University, but there are a lot of swears in this account. So that helps me a lot to kind of just have my own identity and personality. And a lot of it is having a really great boss. My boss is super flexible about, you know, if we have to work a late night or something, having flexible hours and things like that. So I think it's a cultural thing a little bit. And also, I think the willingness to be able to have a life outside of it. And like, I mean, I tend to be the kind of person who wants to make everything perfect before I go home. So efficiency helps a lot with that. But then at times I just have to set a limit and say, okay, this is all that's gonna get done today. So, and having a team that, of people that you really trust helps a lot too. Because if I'm gonna be gone at a conference for 2 days, I completely trust my coworkers to do everything they need to do while I'm gone.
Thanks so much, Sonia.
Thank you.